This is Short-Term Rental Management, the show that is all about short-term rental property management, with your host, yours truly, Luke Carl. All right, here we go. It is Tuesday morning if you are on time. And I am very happy that you're here. I appreciate you for being here. I love you. I do work for the short-term shop, and our whole mission is light in life is to get you into your next vacation rental. We want you to buy a house and use the shop to make that happen. We sell houses. If you want to buy a house, you want to get into real estate, if you're already in real estate, want to buy another one, come to us. But anyway, enough about that. Today on the show, we got Amelia McGee, who wrote the book on self-management. And it's a fantastic conversation. We're both from the same part of the world, so lovely to have her. We're grateful to have her here on Short Term Rental Management. This episode is brought to you by Short Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com. All right, here we are, Short Term Rental Management, and it is a great day to have a wonderful day. And I've got somebody who's an expert in this field, and as a matter of fact, wrote a book on the topic, and it's just wonderful to have you here because, I'll be honest, I feel so warm and fuzzy around you. Because you know what I do, you know what I go through every day, and not everybody can say that. And just great to have you here, Amelia. So introduce yourself. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, super excited to be here. My name is Amelia McGee, and I'm based in Des Moines, Iowa. I live and invest here, so I'm a Midwest girly. And I wrote the book, The Self-Managing Landlord for a Bigger Pocket. So I'm super excited to be here talking all about the fascinating subject of self-managing rental properties.
Yes, and I'm a Midwestern guy as well. I'm from outside of Omaha, which is where I have apartments in Omaha and Des Moines. It was about, I think it's what, 4 or 5 hours, give or take?
It's like 2 hours. It's just a quick little jaunt. Yeah. Ames is further up there.
Okay, yes.
Omaha is like our neighbor.
Okay, yeah, it's been a while. I know that Slipknot is from your neck of the woods. I don't know if that means anything to you.
Totally.
As a matter of fact, I saw Slipknot in Omaha. I went to see, this was, they had just gotten Corey as their singer. And I didn't know any of this at the time. I was a kid. I don't know, maybe 16, 17. And, they played at a little 500 seat. It was a bowling alley, which was a very famous actually venue at the time. It's no longer there, but it's a Walmart now. Anyway, I went to see this band that they were opening for, maybe the opener was the band I was going to see. Either way, it was a band that I knew was a local band, and I said, "Who's this other band?" And it started to get really crazy because all these guys were walking around in like straight jackets and gas masks and things. And I'm like, what is going on? I started to like fear for my life, right? And then this band goes on, and it was the craziest thing I'd ever seen in a 400 seat club, Slipknot, which today, you know, they're massive, massive, play arenas all the time. And anyway, that's the most familiarity I have with Des Moines is Slipknot. But
Slipknot's awesome.
They are. They're huge. You know, I mean, a lot of people listening to this probably have no idea what we're talking about, and that's fine. They're a huge, huge, huge metal band for those that don't know. But anyway, so Des Moines, Iowa, tell me your story. Like, how did you get it started in real estate? Let's go back to the beginning.
Yeah. So I am someone who never wanted to work for somebody else for the rest of my life. And so I was really into like financial independence for a while when I got out of college. And somehow stumbled across real estate investing. I feel like the paying off debt / real estate community have like a lot of overlap. So in 2019, I decided I was going to be a house flipper, and I was going to flip like one or two houses a year and make like 30, 40K extra a year on top of my full-time job, which was project management for a magazine company at the time. And So I bought a flip with my parents. It took me like 3 years to convince them to buy this $30,000 house with me because I didn't have any of my own money. I was like 27 at the time. I had paid off all my student loans and I was like, okay, here it is. I'm going to be this house flipper. I watched HGTV. I was like, I can totally do this. So we bought this house for $30,000. We put $30,000 into it. And I think we sold it for around like $120,000. So before taxes, we made like $60,000. Which at the time I thought, holy shit, like I'm rich.
And how old were you?
This is it. 27.
Oh.
So, but during that time, I also learned like I hate flipping houses. This is so much work because we did everything DIY. And so I stumbled across Bigger Pockets at some point during that flipping experience and was like, I'm going to take my chunk of the proceeds and buy of long-term rental with it because I want to make that passive income every month, passive income, using air quotes there, so that I can eventually quit my full-time job. And so I bought a triplex for $78,000 in a small town in rural Iowa, and got addicted to the, you know, cash flow every single month. So now I have 41 units. I know I skip forward a lot, but started in 2019. Now I have 41 units, which are a mixture of long-term, mid-term, and a few small but mighty short-term rentals in there as well.
Are they all in the small town?
No, they're about half are in Des Moines, which is the capital of Iowa. Half are in that small town. And then I have one outlier that's in a little lake town in northern Iowa called Clear Lake.
Okay. And so you, when you found these, you were just, you just kind of stumbled on them based on finding them on Zillow, or how did that go down?
The first property was on Zillow. I think I actually added it up the other day. I think 70% of my portfolio I found off market. So just like driving for dollars and seeing properties that I was interested in and reaching out to the owners via Facebook or phone book. I had to look some owners up in the phone book, believe it or not, because it's small town Iowa. But yeah, I mean, I always feel like if you don't ask, the answer is no. So I'm not afraid to get out there and say, hey, this property kind of looks abandoned. It looks like shit. I don't tell the owners that, but, you know, I'll reach out and say, hey, looks like you might be interested in selling this property. I'm a local investor. Would you be interested in maybe talking about me buying the property from you?
Right. So you did an Amelia buys houses kind of thing.
Pretty much.
Do you still do that? Do you put signs out to say I buy houses, or?
I actually never have done the sign thing because I found that like being very targeted with my efforts and like physically seeing the property and like going after it. I don't know. I've just found to be way more worth my time than like fielding all these random phone calls that probably aren't going to lead anywhere. So it's all been like outbound. Like outreach, I guess.
I got you. So you drive around, find a house that the yard looks like junk and find their phone number and give them a call.
Yeah, I suppose that's it.
It's probably a little easier to find their phone number in a small town like that if you're actually boots on the ground. Everybody else is skip tracing and all this other stuff from right. Colorado or whatever. But
right. Yeah, totally. And I like specifically look for small multifamily too. So like, if there's multiple electrical boxes on the outside or multiple mailboxes or whatever, I'm like, oh, that's a multifamily. In Iowa, they can be unassuming because a lot of them are conversions. So they look like single family homes. But if you can pick up on those small little things, you can understand that they're multifamily.
Okay. And these were all, seems like they were fairly reasonably priced. Can I go buy one today for these numbers you're talking about?
Yeah. So like the triplex that I purchased originally for $78,000, it needed some work, but today it's probably worth like $140,000.
Oh,
so still not like anything crazy. I think I cash flow around $900 a month on it. So like the numbers aren't like wild, but for a $78,000 purchase, like $900 a month is pretty good.
Okay. Call me crazy. I like that this triplex you bought for whatever it was is not worth $600,000. Okay?
No.
Because that happened to me. This dream that everybody on the internet seems to talk about, when I bought a house and the next thing I knew it was worth four times as much as I bought it for. Okay, that happened to me on my very first rental. This was in Nashville, at the peak of Nashville. It was like when it was first getting to the point where movie stars were moving in every day in the early 2010s. And I bought a rental house, and then literally like a year later, it was the one across the street. Well, they wanted more than twice what I paid, and there was no way I could rent that thing and buy that thing and rent it out, you know? And I was like, dude, I want to buy this whole neighborhood, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I love the fact that the properties are not appreciating to the point where you can't continue to run your business the way you run your business. That's probably, you know, it's yes. The fake COVID equity or whatever you want to call it, that was great, but it really is kind of detrimental if you're living in a rental business plan, right? Where you're trying to make the rents every month. So bravo. I think that's a good market to pick. Okay. So you started buying out, you got this triplex, you started buying houses, and then did they all need work? Were you doing the work, or did they, or some of them pretty ready to go?
A couple of them were ready to go. So the triplex needed work. So I ended up doing a BRRRR on that, the buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. Super powerful strategy. Love that. Then I purchased a quadplex from the same owner that I purchased the triplex. When we walked out of the closing table, I said, hey, I looked you up on the assessor site. I know you own that quadplex. Do you want to sell that to me too? And he said, sure, I'm getting out of the business. So that didn't need any work. I bought a couple more triplexes after that that were BRRRRs that needed like total gut rehabs. So I would say like 60% of my portfolio has needed work and like 40% has been move-in ready. But I really like that like forced appreciation with the BRRRR strategy. But also like I'm investing in the Midwest market, which like we've talked about is not super high appreciating, but it's high in cash flow. And a lot of people on the internet are like, oh, I can't believe you're buying a property for $78,000. And it's like, well, yeah, but it's my strategy is not appreciation here. It's purely cash flow. So like, honestly, at this point, I'd rather buy something in like, I don't know, California, where maybe it's cash flow negative for 5 years, but I've also made $400,000 in equity, you know, in 5 years. I think that's more worth my time at this point.
I agree. I agree. So you're self-managing the entire time?
Yeah. So up until about a year ago, I've been self-managing all 40 units.
But you're still self-managing. We'll get to that, but let's back up. So you had a day job. Do you still have the day job?
No, I quit my day job like a year into investing, which was probably a little bit too early. Mm. But again, I was young, no kids, like no responsibilities, didn't have golden handcuffs, was like, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'll just go back and get another job if this doesn't work out. But like quitting my full-time job allowed me to spend all 40 hours a week on my portfolio versus just like here and there when I still had a full-time job.
Yeah, I get that. And I'm sure you do too. We get this question all the time. How do I quit my job? How do I quit my job? And I'm like, well, what kind of life are you living?
Exactly.
You know, when I first started in real estate, I was young, didn't have any kids and still partying and just like didn't care about anything. And if I were to do it now, there's no way. I mean, I got kids and responsibilities. And are you running around in a Range Rover and living the high life? Or, you know, because if you want to live the no job real estate life, I mean, realistically, it's a pretty modest deal, you know, to do it right. So everybody's story is going to be different. So you place tenants, and what, tell us about that. Cause again, this is short-term rental based, this show. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our guests have no idea what it's like to place a tenant. I've got tons of experience in that realm, but I feel like nobody ever wants to hear about it. But so what is it like for a 28-year-old girl in Des Moines to be showing units and placing tenants?
Yeah, I had no idea what I was doing now looking back. Like, but I'm someone that is a problem solver, and I feel like real estate investing, it's not rocket science. Like, it's all available online to look up. And yeah, there's legal things that you need to follow and make sure you're doing it by the fair housing laws. But basically, I learned everything I know off of YouTube and Bigger Pockets,
yeah,
forums. Those were really popular back when I got started in 2019, yeah. 2020. I used to just Google stuff and the Bigger Pockets forums would come up and tell me exactly like how to do whatever I was looking for.
I used to spend all day in those forums.
Yeah. So I don't know, just like looked up, how do you place a tenant? Like, what are the steps to do that? And then just followed it step by step. I just knew like this was, I'd seen other people online. I was like, if that person can do it and I know I'm just as smart as that person, like I can figure it out if I just follow these steps. And so that's what I did. And I think the biggest part for me was taking the advice online of like, wait until the best tenant or a good tenant comes along instead of getting greedy and just like needing to fill units as soon as possible, because those headache tenants that you like ignore all the red flags about at first are going to be way more work than just having an extra month of vacancy and putting in a really good tenant.
This episode is brought to you by the Premier Short-Term Rental Facebook group. Short-term rental, long-term wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. This is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for short-term rental, long-term wealth. That's short-term rental, long-term wealth on Facebook. And were you at the time doing any softwares? Were you using like a Tenant Turner or some sort of soft management software, et cetera?
Yeah. So I first started out using apartments.com as my property management software, but that was like the only software I was using. And it was, it's horrible. Like it was free. So I was like, great. I want to make as much money off this portfolio as possible. I need this free software. But really all I used it for was collecting rent and signing leases. My tenants still had my phone number. They were still, you know, texting me and emailing me whenever they wanted. So now I use Tenant Cloud, but yeah, at the time it was kind of chaos and a mess.
Tenant Cloud. Very interesting. I use Tenant Cloud. I thought
you
I was
do?
Only, I used to. I thought I was the only person on the planet using Tenant Cloud because nobody ever talked about it. And it's very simple and easy. And
yeah.
Do you like it?
I do like it. I feel like for a medium-sized investor like me, it has all the functionality that I needed to without being crazy expensive. Like yeah. I don't need Buildium or Appfolio, which right. are, you know, no, large softwares. Here's what I love about Tenant Cloud. For a new listener, this is would be my number one tip, is get a property management software. I talk to so many new investors that are not using anything, and it's just crazy. So like Tenant Cloud, you can keep all your messaging there. You can collect deposits and rent and issue deposit returns from the app, which is really nice. It has a really robust maintenance request system, and you can upload custom leases. So you don't have to use their lease. You can put your own in there and use e-signing. So I think it functions exactly for what I need it. I really like it. Their customer support is really great. And they have like a really awesome FAQ section that like walks you step by step how to use the platform.
Yeah, their customer service was good. It's been years since I used it. And at the time, I literally felt like I was the only person using it because everybody was using Cozy.
Yeah.
Which eventually became apartments.com.
Yeah.
And again, everybody listening to this podcast is so used to the owner-res and hospitable, et cetera. This is all the same stuff. It's just for long term. Because it is right. It's a different animal. They got to be in there. They got to put in their background check and their you know financial history, and you're running credit checks, et cetera. So it's quite a bit different than a short-term rental management software. What do you use for that, by the way? You said you got a couple of short terms.
Yeah. So Price Labs, of course, Hospitable. Uh-huh. I love Hospitable. I'm all for like ease of use.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
So like owner-res. Haven't even touched it, have only heard that it's really hard to navigate. I love Hospitable because it's super user-friendly. It's easy. So yeah, Price Labs, Hospitable. I used Turno for a while, but then we just took our cleaner off platform from Turno. So now we just communicate with her directly.
And how did you decide these short terms should be short terms? Are they the same, similar houses to your long terms and you just decided to rent them overnight instead? Or what are they?
Yeah. So the first short term that I started out with was a place in Clear Lake, Iowa, which is a very seasonal market that's driving distance for a lot of Iowans and Southern Minnesotans and Wisconsin people. So I know you and Avery have talked about how there's like three different short-term rental markets. Like, I can't even remember what they are, but one is like where you have to travel by plane to get there. That's not this. This is like a local place that you can drive to. So yeah, it's in Clear Lake. It's all seasonal traffic during the summer. It's on a lake town. But how I found it was my boyfriend's parents knew the owners. We stayed there one time for his birthday. It was super outdated. This little cottage, a two bedroom, one bathroom, red carpet, like hideous, great location. They never used it. I wasn't even investing in real estate at the time, but I knew it was a great property and would make a great short-term rental. So I said, hey, when you guys are ready to sell this property, like get a hold of me, I'll buy it from you. And so like a year and a half later, they were ready to sell it. And they said, hey, do you still want to buy this property? They sold it to me for $105,000.
On the water?
One block off the water. You can see the water from the backyard. So no, it's probably worth $250 now, which has appreciated a lot. But in the summer months, it brings in between $6,000 and $7,000 in revenue. So for $105,000 property, that's pretty good. And then in the winter months, we turn it into a midterm rental for traveling nurses because there's a hospital close by. But okay, that was my first go of it. I don't know why. I just knew that like lots of people travel to that town in the summer. And like even I traveled there and I knew it was a great location. I knew with like a little sprucing up, it could be this super cute little vacation rental. And so again, it's always, the answer is always no unless you ask. So
right. No, that's great. That's wonderful. And that's something that sounds like you could keep that in your family for you know, forever and enjoy it.
Totally.
And go to, we used to go to Okoboji from the, you know, in the Omaha area.
Oh yeah.
All about the Okoboji, and man, is that a party up there. You ever been to the Okoboji?
I love Okoboji. I would say that Clear Lake is very similar to Okoboji, except like half as wild. Like it's the more tame Okoboji, but very similar vibes.
So wild up there. I remember going there when I was like 18 and my band played a show on a Saturday night during peak party season. And I remember I lost my fake ID and I was heartbroken.
No.
I got home from that trip and I'm like, oh man, how am I supposed to go to the bar? I was like 19-year-old kid, you know, but yeah, Okoboji's a party. All right, cool. So we grow, we buy more properties. And then at some point you decided to hire somebody in-house, basically begin your own property management company for your own properties. Right? Tell me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just tired of having to be available 24/7. And I wanted to focus on growing my business. And, you know, I'm really good at lead generation and finding properties, but I found that managing, I think I had 36 units at the time, managing tenants was taking up too much of my time and it wasn't allowing me to focus on buying more properties. So I came up with this idea that I was going to hire, I had this very specific person in my mind. I think this goes into like manifesting, which is, you know, kind of foo-foo-y, but it seems to always work for me. I had this person in my mind, a newer investor, someone that was kind of looking for a mentor who was local to Des Moines. So I posted in a local Facebook group and was like, hey, does anyone want to work like 5 to 10 hours a week for me? Being my property manager, I can also kind of mentor you, you know, here's who I am, here's my portfolio, blah, blah, blah. I had like 25 people apply that were like really good and found this woman, Sarah, who works for me now, but she does all my tenant management. I pay her a flat fee every month to manage my portfolio because logging hours for a property manager is really hard because you'll be sending like 5-minute text messages here and there. It's just, so we settled on a flat fee, but I still do, I would say like 30% of the management and I'm still overseeing her. So it's not completely hands off, but she does all the tenant communication. She places all the tenants. She handles, you know, the showings. She is a licensed agent, so she's able to do that here in Iowa, but Yeah, it's been great. I've been able to continue scaling my portfolio since hiring her. And I realized that I was actually losing money by trying to do everything myself because I was just doing a half-assed job at it. So I've been able to make more money with her on board because she can be more proactive. She can get people lined up to get in the units faster than I could and stuff like that.
Okay. And what is your day-to-day like now? Are you still sourcing deals? Are you actively looking for more properties?
Yeah. So it's 50-50 sourcing deals, but then I also have a company called Wire, which is Women Invest in Real Estate. We have our own podcast. We host retreats for women investors. We have boot camps. So I would say more of my time focuses on that now, which is actually great because real estate investing, I don't know if this is taboo to say, but it's not my passion in life. I get up every day so excited to invest in real estate. There's so many things outside of real estate that I'm interested in, empowering other women to invest in real estate and playing pickleball on a random Tuesday afternoon. So I focus a lot on Wire now and also just have more freedom to travel and enjoy my hobbies outside of work.
Okay, wonderful. Well, you're living the dream. I mean, this is it's what everybody wants out of life. But you still are buying houses. Look at a house today and go buy it if it's a deal.
Totally. I just closed on a fiveplex a month ago. I've got a triplex under contract closing in 2 weeks. So yeah, still sourcing deals at this, I don't want to be a giant investor. So I just buy really good deals now at this point, because my portfolio is of a size where I don't need to buy mediocre deals, if that makes sense.
Where do you get the funds to facilitate the purchase of a new property?
Good question. So partnerships, BRRRR strategy, so recycling money that I've used before, just saving my own money, private money lending. So if I'm going to do a BRRRR deal, a lot of times I'll raise private funds for the initial purchase and the rehab, and then I'll refinance and pay that private money lender off.
Okay.
Cool. So just a multitude, but I would say private money and partnerships are the two biggest ones.
Do you have any crazy stories about a tenant, terrible situations or anything like that?
Oh my God. So many. I feel like just dealing with tenants is just crazy in general. I know it is because this is where they live, and this is obviously they, where someone lives is really important to them, and people can act a fool because of it. But yeah, I've had a lot. I try not to talk too much trash about my tenants because they're my customers, and I'm paying, they're paying for my mortgage. And I think tenants are it's a customer service business, even long-term rentals. I know short-term rentals is very much customer service based, but long-term rentals are too. I will just say now when I have crazy tenant stories, I always invoke the happiness clause, which is basically, it's not a real clause, but it's just hey, you seem unhappy with this property or this living situation. I'm happy to let you out of your lease early. If that would make you, make you happy, let's do that. I just feel at this point, that extra couple thousand dollars a month or whatever just isn't worth it to me. I'll just find somebody else. And I'm privileged to be in that position. But headache tenants, they're just not worth it. Even when you talk about reviews for short-term rentals, you're going to get bad reviews from time to time. You can't get stuck on the reviews, I guess.
Yeah.
They're important, but they're not the end all be all of everything.
I agree with all of that. I have a lot of crazy tenant stories that I am not willing to tell because of liability issues or whatever it may be. Dude, if you're not happy here, if you're not having the greatest vacation of your life, if you're not loving the way you're living your life in this unit, see you later,
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, honestly, they don't realize they're not happy. It's almost like, you got to be dude, you're not happy here. Why don't you go find a situation that you can find at least a chance that you could be happy? Because this is clearly not working for you. And we're happy to let you out of that for, you know, whether it's a short term, you know, perfect example would be last night I had an HVAC go out and this was not a situation where they were unhappy. They were actually really cool. And I fixed it the next day, which is today, and no big deal. But I told them straight up, I was like, listen, if you guys can't handle the heat, because it's going to be tomorrow before I can get somebody to look at that HVAC, full refund, go, please go find somewhere where you can enjoy your vacation because you deserve it. You know, you deserve it. You worked hard to spend the money on this vacation. And but I do think that a lot of times people just don't realize they're not happy. And it's not necessarily our job as landlords to tell them that, but it is, it does get to the point sometimes where you got to kind of scoot them in that direction, you know?
Totally. I've actually found that no one's ever taken me up on that offer. But the complaints have stopped after I've invoked that happiness clause. So
happiness clause. I like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. So tell us about the book again. How do we find the book?
Yeah. So it's The Self-Managing Landlord. It's all about how to self-manage properties yourself. And I know this is, you know, short-term rental specific, but I think a lot of the concepts that we talk about in the book can be applied to any portfolio. It's available at womeninvestinrealestate.com/book. You'll get 10% off if you use that website, but it's also on Amazon. I'll hold it up so people can see what it looks like. Super cute.
Very cute. It's cute. I would use the word cute.
Yeah, it's cute. It fits our personality, my co-author Grace and I. But it's also available on Bigger Pockets website. So you can find it anywhere there.
I happen to think that long-term and short-term management is fairly similar at the end of the day. I get so many people that come in through the shop and through my pocket for wherever. They're almost like they're almost like allergic to long-term rental. And I'm just sitting here like, my brain doesn't work like that. I bought a house in a town and I put a tenant in it. I bought a house in another town where tenants don't happen. People go there on vacation and that's how you rent the house there. To me, it's just like, this is what you do in this town. This is what you do in that town, like at your lake, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, having a lot of experience in both of them, I really do think they're pretty damn similar at the end of the day. So if you're out there worrying, like freaking out about, oh man, this is so much different than the way I do things over here in long-term or the way I do things in short-term. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Are you on that same page? Do you think they're similar?
Absolutely. I think there's a few softwares that are different. And like the way you set up your properties obviously are different, but at the end of the day, it's customer service based. It's dealing with people. It's super similar. Like if you read our book and then you read Avery's book, like you're going to have it down. Mm-hmm. Like there's not a lot of difference between the two. And I also think you should have a diversified portfolio. I think you should, it's great to own both. Like long-term for long-term wealth and short-term for money now, plus hopefully appreciation. But yeah, totally.
I agree. Yep. Yep. So don't be afraid of long-terms, my short-term people. And life is good. Life is wonderful. All right. Tell me a little bit more about your group.
Yeah. Women Wire. Invest in Real Estate. Wire. Yes. We are an online community, but we have in-person retreats as well. We have a retreat in Salt Lake City in September. They're small, intimate retreats for 20 women. We all stay in one massive Airbnb, or short-term rental. And it's just a great time. It's just about networking and connecting. And like you said, like, it's a chance to be around people that understand what you go through, that know the business. Like, you don't have to start from scratch and explain what an STR stands for. Like, it's just, they already know, they get it. You can get right into the deep conversations. You don't have to, you know, catch them up on what cash flow means. So yeah, you can find us at womeninvestinrealestate.com or at wire.community on Instagram.
Wonderful. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time. I'd love to have you back or maybe on a panel at some point. Let's stay in touch and thank you so much.
Thank you.